Thank you, Halsey, Joan, Chris. It's great to be here. And it's wonderful to see all my students attending this reading. So I'm very happy about that as well. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. All right, I'm going to read three poems from my new book. It's called Vertical Bridges. And I'll begin first with a river prayer. And Pittsburghers, please join me in the name of the Allegheny and of the Monongahela and the Holy Ohio. Amen. I'm going to start with my title poem called Vertical Bridges. My Pittsburgh childhood, the hills where we lived, the river valley where my Southern Italian immigrant family worked in a steel mill, glass plant, and mirror works along the Allegheny. The river where my friends and I jumped in by swinging on a rope that hung from a tree along the bank, where my dad and his siblings were thrown in to learn how to swim or sink. River that floods, where my great uncle as a boy went fishing on high waters one Easter and drowned trying to save his friend. River polluted, bridges to cross. Then came a day I looked up to the hills and saw what's between. Steps. Pittsburgh is a triangle, a confluence of rivers, but my geometric view of the city began to take a different shape. The perpendicular, where horizontal meets vertical, city steps and steps in the city. People climbing them, sitting on them, shoveling and painting them. Steps to admire for their architectural beauty. Steps my grandfather, a stonemason from Sicily, built. Steps my Calabrian father climbed to and from the steel mill. The more I saw, the more I realized what I had overlooked since childhood, what had come to draw my attention and why. Steps are vertical bridges, and I want to cross them. As connections in the landscape, connections we make with each other, that middle ground where we meet. And since my students are not from the Pittsburgh area, I can tell you that what inspired this book was about 700 and I can't remember now, 62, I don't remember the figure, but nearly 750 public stairways are in the city of Pittsburgh, more than any other in the country. So we hold that title and I think we're very proud of it. We have events now that celebrate it. We have the Pittsburgh Step Trek. I've co-founded an organization called Step and Stanzas to celebrate city steps, write poetry and perform on the steps. And the poems from this collection are a result of that project that I'm involved in. So a second poem I want to read, I've written about steps in Pittsburgh, but other parts of the country and the world. And this one is called, this poem is called Emergency. These are stairs in Chatsworth, Georgia. An 87-year-old Syrian woman climbs down one step at a time, one hand holding onto the rail, the other a steak knife. She slowly makes her way to a wooded area. She stoops down, reaches for dandelion greens to cut them, toss them into her apron pocket, toss them in her husband's salad bowl with lemon and garlic. Dispatcher, what's your emergency? Caller, there's a lady walking on the hiking trail. She has a knife and she won't leave. She doesn't speak English. A police car pulls up. Three officers pull out their guns. The woman doesn't drop the steak knife, despite their commands and attempt to show her how. Police tase her. Dot red, stun red, sting red, burning her skin. Electric red, shock red, enough bolts to stop her heart. That night, there's one less knife in the kitchen drawer. That night, her husband eats salad dressed with lemon and garlic. Salad without dandelion greens. He doesn't know why. And this last poem I'm going to read is called It's Golden Cast. And I read it, I am the daughter of an immigrant and the mother of an immigrant. And so I read this for my father, Mariano Procopio, and my son, Mario Curuchiche. My father was born on the slopes of Calabria's Aspromonte. My son, the highlands of Mazatenango in Guatemala. My father, rocking with westward ocean waves in the ship's crowded steerage, a little boy of four pushed against his older sister as they board. She standing beside their mother, holding a baby. She's too weak to breastfeed. So a goat on the boat saves my Uncle Dominic's life, the story goes. My son, 4 months old, jetting north on a plane high above the border, nestled in a snuggly on his father's chest, fed with carnation formula, burped every 2 hours as his foster mother had done. I, the daughter and mother of immigrants, a generation between, the riser connecting their lives they were to tread. My father, who died years before Mario was born, who never shared his immigrant past or his grandson's immigrant future. So I show my son what I've kept of his grandfather's life. Map of Italia on a green, white, and red patch. High school class ring with a gemstone. Florida state decal. Model of his first car, a 1934 Ford Coupe, Air Force wings, business card, and a pen with his name engraved on it, signature stamp that he used to use as the school business administrator, embroidered handkerchiefs, Steelers fan club pin, Italian dictionary, certificate to acknowledge his name is included on the American Immigrant Wall of Honor in the shadow of the Statue of Liberty. Kennedy half dollars, the tacks and cufflinks, a stray bullet and malocchio horn on a gold chain. Mario eyes the bullet, so I tell him a story my Uncle Frank once told at a Corso family picnic many years ago, about the time the family traveled to Canada to visit Cugini, and the border patrol stops them on the way back. The policeman asks my grandfather his name, and with his Italian accent, Francesco Antonio Corso. And when asked to see my grandfather's passport, he tells the officer that he doesn't have it on him. So the officer peers through the window of the car, sees six bambini packed in the back seat. He asked my grandfather to open the trunk to inspect for contraband. There's silence. The worry that a stick of salami or a hunk of provolone would be cause to arrest an immigrant without his citizenship papers. The officer walks back to my grandfather's window and orders him to get out of the car. My grandfather obliges and shows the officer more than his empty pockets. He lifts his shirt and reveals to this stranger what he has never shown his family: a foot-long scar across his stomach from taking a bullet in World War I as an American soldier serving his country. A bullet whose shot would pain him until his dying day. The officer signals for my grandfather to get back into the car. He waves him through. I give my son the bullet to hold in his hand. He examines its golden cast, runs his fingers along its smooth cylinder, shakes his cupped hand up and down to feel its weight. The look in his eyes tells me what he cannot say. This is what you dodge, why you learn to take cover. This is your will to survive. Thank you.